Chair and I are here. I have Thomas Russell. I have Abel Weissman. I have Steve Metalich, Lorenz Sabine. Anyone else? And Glenn. Why don't we go ahead and get started? I had invited Sabine to join us as she is. Many of you have met her because we have the elected reps have attended cross-constituency consultations with the CCTLDs, and many of you have met Sabine. I asked her to join us to talk with us about the views of one of the, I guess I should say, the largest
CCTLDs
CCTLD registry, and it's quite a unique, I think, situation. May I just ask you, Sabine, to tell us a bit about your registry, and then we'll go into maybe just a few questions. This is very much an informal dialogue in our effort as a task force to better understand the uniqueness that exists in these CCTLDs, because we, of course, will be making some recommendations related to who is. At this point, the kind of at a very broad level, our recommendation is that who is issues need to develop on different tracks in relation to the CCTLD and the GTLD. Mm. But we wanted to have some information exchange with several of the CCTLD managers just to improve our understanding. Mm.
Okay. Yes, as you know, DINIC is one of the bigger CCTLDs, and we are very much based in Germany, so we don't have very much customers from outside Germany. At the moment, we have about 15,000 registrations from outside Germany, mainly big companies have protecting their trade names, according to 5.5 million in total. That's a very less amount. So basically, most of our customers are German residents. There is possibility to register outside Germany, but it's very, very less used. Currently, about 70 to 80% of our users are private users using a domain, and that's, I think, also why we have so much registrations in total. So in Germany, it's very popular to have a sort of a birthday website or wedding website or whatever, for just private purposes. And we have, since the very beginning, a WHOIS service, like the WHOIS service in the .com area. But we have had a lot of discussions with our data protection authorities about that issue. And we have now found a sort of a modus vivendi where we both can live with. From the registry's point of view, we have basically the intent, or we want to publish at least the data who owns the domain name, or who is the holder of a domain name, just because it's you. If somebody wants to.
Hi, this is Oscar.
Hi, Oscar, stop in here. Because if somebody wants to see if somebody has valid his trademark or his name, he has to know who is the domain name holder. And actually, that's the only thing which the Data Protection Authority allows us to publish. And that's who is the holder and the address of the holder, the postal address of the holder. We have had a lot of discussions to publish also telephone number, fax number, or email addresses, and that was refused actually by the Data Protection Authority because they say there is no real technical need for that. So in Germany, we have had the discussion, is there a technical or administrative need, and if there is no need, if it's simply a nice to have, they refuse to publish the data. Only if we have real hard reasons, then we are allowed to. That's basically the summary.
May I get onto the queue?
Yeah, sure. Shall we start a queue? Let's start with Thomas, and then who else?
This is Steve Metalich, if I can go in the queue.
Okay. Why don't we start with Thomas and Steve, and then we'll add other people to the queue.
Sabine, I have one more question. What are you doing about advanced search services, such as searching all domain names registered by a certain party or all domain names with a certain administrative or technical contact or things like that?
We only do that on a per case basis if somebody comes to us and makes us a reason. Actually, can claim that he has a reason that we should do the search for it. There is no overall search possibility viable.
So it's not no automatic service, but people have really to get to you and say, please.
No, people have to come to us and have to say, yes, we have. Here is our trademark. We have the need to find out star trademark star. It's not viable, and it's not allowed to give it a viable.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, I just wanted to get a little more information about the contact that you've had with the data protection authorities. As I understand it, in Germany, there's not a central national data protection authority. There are a number of them. Maybe you could talk a little more about the contact you've had with them and the directives you've received from them.
Yes, in Germany, DINIC is a private entity. We are underlying the data protection law for not public authorities. That's the clear term. And so, as DINIC is residing in Frankfurt, the public authority which is responsible for us is the data protection authority for Hessen, which is the federal country where Frankfurt is in. And they have done in 2000 quite a lot of things according to our practice, and they have it also reported in there. There is also a report from them, which is only available in German, but there they have actually discussed all the issues.
So when you say that, you said in the beginning it was the data protection authorities would permit certain things and not permit certain things. You referred to the HESA authority.
I refer to the Hessen authority, which is the one who is our supervisor according to these things.
Right. Thank you very
much. So they have to supervise all the organizations in Hessen.
Thank you.
Sabine, it's Marilyn.
Yes?
Let me see if anyone else wants to join the
queue. Yeah, can I get in the queue, Tony Harris?
Okay, Tony.
Yes, and Laurence as well.
And Laurent.
But actually, I have to stress that even if we are the Hessen is responsible for us, I know that there are coordination meetings on federal level where all the federal authorities come together, and I know that they have raised the issue also on a more global level in Germany.
Mm. Let me take Tony and Lorenz, and then I'll add myself at the end of the queue.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Sabine, good morning. Tony Harris here. I've just accessed the DINIC.de, and I entered a domain name, which is AboveNet, which I believe was registered by Michael Schneider some time back. And I was just seeing the fields that you have here in the response. It's in German, which gives me a little bit of a problem. I don't speak German.
Yes.
But you have three items at the end, which are status, letzte Aktualisierung, and stand the Datenbank. I'm not too clear what those three cover. The last three fields in your response on domain name data.
Okay, you have domain name. First is domain name, then you have domain name holder, domain inhaber.
Yes, that would be AboveNet. That's fine.
Okay, then you have name server.
Yes.
Then you have the status, which is connected, or actually if we have a status, if you have in Germany what we are doing is we check name servers before we enter it in the zone. We don't check
you run a check on the name servers.
Yeah, we run a check on the name servers.
Is that automatic, or do you do that manually?
It's an automatic.
It's important because we were discussing this the other day. So you have automatic then?
It's automatically. What we check is actually if the name service which you're telling us have the zone loaded, because in our approach, it's actually seen if somebody tells us a name server and we enter the name server in our DE name server, we start traffic on your name server. And so, therefore, we are looking for a sort of consent that you are willing to provide the service. And therefore, we do the check. And if you have, if the checks didn't run through, you have 4 weeks to come up with a new update, and then you have their not yet ready status.
Okay. And the one after that, the, let's say, actually, Siran?
That's a last change.
That's the last change. In this case, it says August 2000. Fine.
Yeah.
And the Standard Bank, I suppose, is today's date, because it says 23 September.
It's today's date. It's sometimes, usually it should be actually the same date and the same time.
Okay.
But sometimes if you don't, if it's done on a replication, then you have sometimes a delay from 1 hour or things like that. But it's today. It should be today.
Fine. Thank you for clarifying that.
Mm-hmm. We are working on the English.
Okay. Yeah, I tried the flag, but it didn't bring the English up.
Yeah, it's not yet workable, but it's one of our major tasks next couple.
Understand.
Of
okay.
Lorraine?
Yes, I just maybe you answered a little bit to this question. How the data are? How do you keep the data up to date? Do you regularly update the data which are on the WHOIS, and how does it? How do you organize that?
Actually, we have a sort of a registrar model. So the registrars have the contact to the registrant, and they are providing us with the data. But the contract about the domain is direct between the registrant and the registry. And we have the possibility to cancel the domain if there is incorrect data. And it's one duty of the registrant that he provides us with correct data.
So
usually
it's up to the registrant to...
It's an obligation of the registrant.
But then if someone contacts you and say, this data, I looked in the WHOIS and this data is obviously wrong, do you react immediately? Do you do something?
Yes, we usually give the information to the registrar to provide us with correct data. If the registrar didn't come back to us, we cancel the domain.
Oh,
yeah.
That's...
It's very straightforward. We have some iterations in there, but it's more or less straightforward. Thank you.
Sounds like heaven.
It's not heaven. It's sometimes very difficult because our registrars are not usual. You know, you have to deal with them on a basis, but it's working.
Okay.
It takes some time, but it works.
Sabina, it's Marilyn. I have a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that sounds... very different to me about DENIC from many other, from the GTLD registration. At one point, about 3 years ago, I got Network Solutions VeriSign to do an estimate for me of the kinds of registrations they had, just a ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, something like 70 to 80% were entities, organizations, businesses, people who were holding themselves out to communicate with the public in some way or another. Then there was, of the remaining 20%, there was some small number that were truly individuals. And then there was a number of people who fell into the classic cyber squatting warehouser category.
Yeah.
What you've described, and it doesn't surprise me, but I think it's very unique, I think it may be different than the GTLDs. You've described a very, very high percentage of individuals who use the domain name really for almost personal use.
Mm. It's actually personal use, or it's also used for their, you know, Germans are a clubbies. They come together, they have football teams, they have garden teams and whatever, and they just use it to communicate. I think it's, first of all, it's very cheap, and it's getting very popular. We have, in the past, we have had two companies who offered it very aggressively, power, and it was in 2000, and it became very, very popular for everybody to have his own domain name.
And so that is what you have SLDs, I take it. You have second level.
No, we don't have.
You don't have.
We have just flat. We have at the moment flat 5.6 million domain.
You do. Okay, it is flat. Hmm.
But according to cyber squatting, that's not such a big problem in Germany. And that's because in Germany, usually people who are have to pay their... if you go to court because of trademark violation, the one who loses the case have to pay the fee. And they have to pay the fee accordingly to the estimated damages he made. So if you have a very well-known trademark, then it's very, very expensive if you lose the case.
Mm.
And so people learn very fast that it can be very expensive if you just do cyber squatting on trademarks.
Mm. And let's see, I had a couple of other questions. You talked about data accuracy. Have you... Do you see, I mean, of the 15,000 names you have that are companies doing business in Europe, or primarily companies that are protecting their trademark?
We think it is. We don't have really looked deeply into it, but it's most of the entities doing business in Germany have registered with a German company subset.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and we opened for foreign registrations in 2001, last year October, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so. It's only 1 year ago.
Right.
No, 2000. We opened in 2000.
2000. Right.
So
I
it's 2 years ago, and it we don't market it very aggressively, or nobody markets it really aggressively, and so most of the trademarks are either registered by the subsidiaries, the German subsidiaries of the big businesses, or yes, some minor amount of people from outside.
So really,
I have a very short question. Something
sure.
Sabine just said.
Mm-hmm.
When you said it's inexpensive, how much does a domain name cost in Germany?
We are working on a non-for-profit base, so we only take the money from our members, which we need to run the service. But in Germany, you can get a domain name, let's say, for $4 or $5 a year.
Oh,
or
that's very reasonable.
Or even less if you accept sort of marketing and advertisement.
Okay. Thank you.
Sabine, I want to go back to the process, and I'll use my company as an example just to kind of walk through this. So let's say that hypothetically AT&T has registered a domain name, or that we are concerned about policing our mark because and we come to you and what's the process we would follow? What's the process my inside or outside counsel would follow?
Okay.
Because we have evidence, or we present you with a request, let's say, that says, you know, we believe that some scam artist is going around from country to country and registering our famous and well-known mark, and it's causing consumer problems and confusion, et cetera. And so we want to pursue validating that that this is happening, and we want to file a UDRP.
So DNIC is not following UDRP.
Okay.
So actually, we will offer you a sort of dispute entry where you can block the domain for transfer, and then you have to go to the domain name holder directly.
You would offer us. Tell me what.
We call it dispute entry. Which allows you to block the domain for transfer. And then you can go to the domain name holder and either make him friendly aware of the thing that he's violating your trademark, and he maybe should give up the domain name, which in Germany works quite good, because if you tell him the amount of money for whom you will sue him in Germany,
right,
they usually step back. And if the domain name holder gives up, then you automatically get the domain name.
So we would come to you and present our evidence that it's a
trademark.
A trademark. And does it have to be a trademark in that's filed in Germany, or
no? It can. It has to be a trademark which is actually valid in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
It just means it can also be European or worldwide. it can also the name. You have to make evident that you have a sort of allowance to use the name. We don't charge it, really.
Yeah.
So it can also be an American trademark.
Right.
It's more or less you have to make evident that you have a right.
Mm-hmm. And
but
then,
it's not a real, we don't charge about it and say that yes, you have to present that or that.
And let me go back to the accuracy issue. So we could get the domain name hold. We could get the domain name that's registered, and we could get the mailing address of the person.
The postal address.
Postal address. Yeah.
Yes.
And are there circumstances where people need to come back to you to get other kinds of contact information, telephone numbers or email addresses? And what's the process by which you would be able to provide that?
Usually, if you have the postal address in Germany, you are able to sue somebody.
Right, right.
So that's actually why we have defined together with the Data Protection Authority this as the minimum requirement.
Mm-hmm.
So usually, if they, and we don't have always email or telephone access to them. So that's actually the minimal need somebody has to provide. And if he gets a letter and he don't respond, then you have always the possibility to sue him immediately.
What if the mailing address is inaccurate, if it's false?
If it's false, you give us the information that the information is false, and then we go to the procedure I described earlier. We go to the registrar and tell, hey, your customer, which you have put into is wrong data. Please provide us with a new address.
Right.
And if you don't come back, then we are able to cancel.
I see. I'm interested in the issue of cancellation because we have kind of seen that as a fairly let me explain one thing that is happening. And I was at part of the FTC meeting here with some of the registrars last week. Much of the data that is in the WHOIS, the GTLD WHOIS, is what I call age data. It's wrong because it's old, and changes have happened, the sysadmin changes, et cetera. Do you gather, it sounds like you might not gather all of the kinds of data that the GTLD registries do, such as the technical contact and the administrative contact and the registrant themselves?
What we are doing, we have our registrars has an obligation to give us. First of all, the registrant has an obligation to give us all the new information.
Mm-hmm.
If he don't give us the information, we see that as a violation of the contract,
mm-hmm.
and that's for us an issue to cancel it.
Mm-hmm.
And our registrars are also obligated by contract to provide all the information they get from the registrant directly to us without. Delay.
Mm-hmm.
And people learned in Germany that, they learned it on the hard way.
Right.
They learned it.
Right.
Steve, may I, this is Steve Metallic.
Please.
May I ask a question? I thought you said something about what information you collect, or rather, what information is collected from the register. Do you collect the email address and the telephone number of the registrant, or do you not collect
that? We collect for domain name holder. We collect only the domain name of the domain name holder and the fully postal address. For the administrative contact, we collect more information, like the email address and the telephone number.
I see.
But only if the administrative contact allows us to publish the data, we are allowed to publish it. So sometimes we use it for phoning him, but if he didn't allow us to publish the data, it's the problem.
Can I ask a follow-up question on the one of the issues that we sort of struggle with is who else needs access to the data and what they use it for? The survey that we did. Let me pause for a minute and see if anyone else from our group has joined in the meantime. Do we have anyone who hasn't announced themselves?
Yeah, Marilyn, this is Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. You're here just in time because I was going to try to paraphrase a question and I was thinking, oh, God, if Sarah's here, she could help me.
Well, no, I was just going to ask about the law enforcement act.
Oh, good, good, good. Sarah is with EPIC, Sabine. Let me...
Pardon me?
Sarah is with EPIC. She'll tell you who that is, and she's one of our task force members, and then let me turn a couple of questions over to her. Sarah?
Hi, this is Sarah Andrews. I'm with the Electronic Privacy Information Center. We're a public interest group in Washington, D.C. And I just had some questions regarding the law enforcement access provisions. Are the access provisions the same for the private individuals to get access to WHOIS data?
We have... According to German data protection law, usually there is the same, the data we publish is published to everybody on the same base, so there is no difference. According to German data protection law, usually the protection for private persons is much bigger than for business entities. So we usually have to deal with, as we always have the possibilities that there are private data also included, we have to deal with everything like if it's their private data, and therefore we have to protect it in a similar way, in a special way.
But when you're doing the search on a case-by-case basis, what would they need to show you? For example, the trademark owner shows you, you know, evidence of their trademark.
If it's a German domain holder, German trademark holder, we usually get a copy of the trademark thing. How do you say it?
Yes, it's like a certificate or something like that from a counterpart to the PTO, right?
Yeah, something where you have the official. Entry data. No, how it should.
And Sabine, how are you dealing with national law enforcement, criminalpolizei, etc.?
Sorry, I understand you very, very. It's very difficult for me to understand.
Wie geht ihr mit Kriminalpolizei und ähnlichen Ermittlungen um?
Oh, usually what we are usually doing is if they have a sort of a can show us the evidence, why they need the data, then we give them the data. Sometimes we have to give them, if it's for fiscal analysis, they have to, we have to give them more data due to German law. But usually we try to look in German law and then we give according to German law the data they are requiring.
Sabine, it's Marilyn. I want to ask you a follow-up question on this particular issue. One of the things that I observe with law enforcement that I work with, and I, wearing a totally different hat, I chair a group that is concerned about protecting kids online.
Uh-huh.
And they rely, local law enforcement uses WHOIS fairly heavily, both domestically and internationally, to try to look for child pornographers and other kinds of problems. Do you, in your dealings with law enforcement, do you get different contacts? Do you have a lot of different contacts from law enforcement, ranging from tax to customs to a variety of different folks that come to you with different kind of needs, or are their needs all pretty much the same?
Usually the one who are looking for child pornography and things, they don't come directly to us because they get the data they need usually by the WHOIS information directly. I have got a letter from one where they are complying about also one entry which is wrong, where we deal on the same basis how I told you earlier. We have other issues that's mainly by the, first of all, by the tax authorities. They are sometimes asking for lists of information because if somebody has haven't had paid tax for some internet offer, they are looking for other internet offers he is providing, and then they are looking for lists. But that's usually not the case on the other.
Should we do another queue? Does anyone else have?
Yes, I have a question,
Lorraine.
Thomas has another one, but this can go into the end of the queue.
Okay, so Lorraine, Thomas, Sarah, did you have any follow-up?
Not right now.
Okay.
Thanks.
Lorraine.
Yes, Sabine, when you say, if I understand well, for enforcement purposes, you said that before providing data, you need evidence that these data are needed.
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean, for instance, that here, for instance, our anti-piracy department sees that there is a website where our DVDs, for instance, are sold illegally, and they need to have the contact data of the person behind this website, and they contact you? Do they? What information they need to provide you? What do you mean when you say I need evidence? Which type of evidence do you need?
No, the problem is that this data you are describing, that is also public in the WHOIS. So if they need additional data, it's mostly it's a database searches for lists of domain names, lists of which domains somebody has. So it's a more more dedicated search in the database, and therefore we need evidence, and that's more or less. If somebody will go to a court and ask us to provide the data, then we will have to give it.
But you don't give data without a court order.
Von mir?
Keine Daten ohne Gerichtsbeschluss oder wie verstehst du?
Nee, wir versuchen. Ich sage in Deutsch.
Okay.
He will translate it. he's a lawyer. He can do it better.
So you need a court order, if I understand.
No, we don't need a court order. Was wir machen, ist, wir versuchen die Chancen irgendwie abzuschätzen, ob wir es müssen. Aber dann geben wir es auch.
They are trying to figure out if I have or if it's more we have to give it or we don't really have to give it. So how important is it? If I understand this correctly, so I'm doing some guesstimate. If it's a court order, they will always give it. If it's not a court order, you may get it or you may not get it.
Yeah.
Correct?
So we don't require court orders because that's...
No, I said it was sufficient but not necessary.
Yeah.
For instance, in this country, ISPs get a very high number of requests for information, what we call header information, and we actually have a law that prevents us as ISPs from providing, called ECPA, Electronic Communication Privacy Act.
I don't understand. Can you just try to repeat it?
Much of the information that I was just trying to think about. So, how do you determine that the law enforcement person who comes to you is really a law enforcement person? Do you require them to give you a badge number or some kind of verification that they're with the tax authority or?
Usually you see it at their they usually do it on official paper letter. So you have the postal address, and if you send to fiscal department something, then it's more
right
or less
right
authority.
Okay, so you would
we don't give it on the phone or we
okay,
don't give
okay.
it via
That's...
email, so it's just we only give these things on paper. And
okay, that's
so approximately, would you say how long does it take for this procedure? If we need to access some data, we contact you, you decide that you have enough evidence to provide this data, you send back a letter, how long does it take?
It can be done within 1 week.
If
some of Maryland is coming with AT&T headlines and telling me we are AT&T and we want to see what AT&T star is there, then we usually do that.
Sabine, if we had an urgent situation where we had a point-o site up, like a child point-o site was up with our brand, or it was a piracy site or a consumer fraud site, there's a way to expedite?
No. Actually, we don't see, in Germany, actually, that's one thing which can done by the ISP,
yeah.
Or which can also be done, but you can only do it on IP level and not on domain level. So it doesn't make really sense if you just put it on a domain level.
Mm. And I'm assuming I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask anyway. The last question I sent you, which was about marketing.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of complaints in the United States. There's an estimate that a third of the traffic that is being carried by ISPs is unsolicited, and we call it spam here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you and there's a concern that a lot of the registrars in the GTLD environment or even the registries that the who is being data mined, or that perhaps the lists are being sold, and in fact in the GTLD environment they are sold for marketing purposes.
Yeah.
What's the situation related to that in Germany?
Yeah, that's actually in Germany you don't get the data on a marketing base, so we don't provide the data on a CD, or you can't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So the data is only with us, and what we are doing is we are limited also. We have the Whois service currently. You can only ask for one domain. You don't get like in the Whois. You don't get more Whois information.
Ah, so you only get one at a time.
So you only get one at a time. So and we are at the moment discussing also on a further limitation on the amount of requests per IP. So that data mining is more or less prohibited.
And is there any discussion that you're aware of about transfer of the data within? Do you see any discussion when you talk with the data privacy folks about the transfer of the data? Like if I'm in France and I make an inquiry, is there any concern being raised with you by the data privacy folks about non-German citizen, you know, about this German citizen information being transferred across borders?
I think they haven't really thought about it.
Mm.
So they didn't come up with me. That's fortunately actually my data privacy agency authority, which is responsible for me, is also responsible for looking for these child pornography things. And therefore, they are usually wearing two hats. On the one hand side, they want to protect the data. On the other hand side, they need the data for
mm-hmm.
this issue we mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So we try always to find a modus operandi which is for both issues feasible.
Yeah. Thomas had another question.
Actually, two of them at this point. First one, I hope I understood you correctly. Is it right that you do not provide bulk access,
yes.
That is the complete database for any purpose?
Yes.
Okay. Second question, I'm a little curious about one thing. The German rough equivalent of the FBI, the Bundeskriminalamt, has a department which does what's called Anlassunabhängige Recherche in Datennetzen. That means they are doing research on data networks for crimes without any specific hint. They are phishing. And I'm wondering if they are contacting you about any things, and what kind of access you are providing to them besides, of course, the public who is.
None I'm aware of.
Okay. Just curious.
Thomas, did you have another question?
No, that was it.
Anyone, we'll take one last round. Sabine, I have a
question. It's not really a question. It's sort of a statement. we've talked to Bernie. We're going to talk to Patricio Oblito a bit later at 12 today. We have we will probably ask to have a further dialogue with the CCTLDs in Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
And I would send that invitation off to the ACCOM and ask whether it's possible to have some further discussion. We are hearing in an interesting discussion that is coming across from the GTLD registrars. You allow, I think, my question would be a bit convoluted. Do you allow ICANN accredited GTLD registrars to act as a DENIC registrar?
No. Oh, yes and no. Actually, everybody who is a member of DENIC is allowed to be a registrar within DENIC. And we have some ICANN accredited registrars, which are also DENIC registrars, but we don't allow ICANN registrars to stay.
I see.
So they have to play to our rules. But actually, AT&T is a member of DENIC.
Right.
Just for information.
We're a small member.
You're a small member, yes. According to the numbers.
Yes.
But not as those.
And mostly for our interest is in trying to take care of our own customers and of our own needs rather than to be a commercial provider. Let me go back to my second question. We're hearing now from some of the GTLD registrars that they are concerned about the cost of gathering the data and keeping it accurate, and are not sure that it is that it is their job to bear that responsibility of keeping who is as it is presently offered in the GTLD environment. I don't mean to paraphrase for them, but I'm hearing that discussion emerge.
Marilyn, I'm sorry if I step in here, but I have one I'm trying to understand your question in one point. Are we talking about proactive checking at the time of registration, or are we talking about retroactive checking after the domain has been registered for some time?
The discussion I heard, Thomas, was that the feeling was that they don't need the data, which I sort of questioned because of transfers, and that's where I wanted to go with Sabine, is to ask her about transfers. The discussion I'm hearing emerging is, and I'm sorry that Tim and Ken are not on the phone because it would be good to get their point of view, that much of the data that's gathered in the GTLD who is exceeds the data that they need for billing purposes. Except for the administrative contact, which is the primary information that they would need, is provided really to serve others' needs, and that's an additional cost to gather that data and keep it accurate. And my question to Sabine is, to what extent do you find problems in transfers between registrars if those are supported in terms of the accuracy of the data?
Really none, mostly none, because we have different transfer rules than the GTLD area. So the transfer rules in Germany are done on a complete different base. So usually the transfer in Germany is started by the registrar who gains the customer,
mm-hmm.
and he has to clarify that it's actually the same customer who is the domain name holder, and then this request is pre-checked by the former registrar, and the former registrar has to answer it. So it's a sort of double check.
That's actually what
Sabine, I may send you the draft approach that's now being considered in the transfers task force, because we probably could have learned a lot by just talking to you than to have spent these months trying to come up with a solution. But let me ask...
It's actually a duty of our registrars to both check if it's the same domain and holder, and they have to do it. That's part of their job.
Any other questions for Sabine? This has been very helpful, and I think is particularly helpful for us as a task force in trying to, you know, think about what different issues are out there that CCTLDs face, and also helps to inform our thinking about the broader work of the task force.
Okay.
Thank you. And
yes,
we will see you in Shanghai, yeah?
Yes, we will see you.
Oh, good.
Okay, see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We'll be joined by Patricio, I think, around 12.
Yeah, Marilyn, this is Oscar. I don't know if Patricio would make it, but he's informed and he received all the information about this issue. So I will tell you.
Great. Could we maybe, Oscar, in the event that what I'd like to do, maybe we could ask you to talk with us briefly about the issues related to quiz in Mexico?
Yeah. What exactly would you like to meet?
Maybe just briefly, what kind of quiz you have, how you support accuracy of the data, whether you, I don't know if you were on when Sabina told us that probably their estimate is that of their 5.5 million names, only about 15,000 are outside of Germany, and that most of the registrations, 70 to 80% of the registrations, are private users. Not even companies, but more private uses, which is very different from GTLDs.
Okay, let me start by telling you that the quiz is an automatic quiz. I mean, this is a live quiz. By the time the holder of the domain name updates their information on our website, it is already updated on the WHOIS database. So it is a live WHOIS database, which is very few CCTLDs have this system because it represents to have a different infrastructure. So we have this live WHOIS. We have a information. We used to have the social information like telephone numbers, email, and some postal address for the contacts, but we received in the past weeks, we received some kind of massive access getting the information from the contacts, and we decided to stop the publication of this social information until we could define from the technical point of view, a system that may prevent of doing this bad practice of abuse of the WHOIS.
Yeah, can I just stop you? So basically, what you had was what we would call a data mining attack. Where
yes, we checked the logs of this access, and it was very very limited. I mean, they couldn't get more than 100 domain names information, but the issue is that the customers really received spamming from these people, so there were affected customers.
Should I be embarrassed and ask you if it was a U.S.-based entity?
I'm sorry?
Was it a U.S.-based entity that was doing the data mining?
We couldn't see if it is only a U.S.-based entity, but Apparently, it is from Asia mm-hmm. and U.S. IP address.
Mm-hmm. Because we've had, interesting, we've had huge problems as ISPs in recent, like in the recent months from Asia. I'm sorry, I interrupted you, but so now you are blocking access to the telephone number, the email, yes?
Right. We are blocking the social information. We just published the NIC IDs, the very basic information, domain names, the name of the people, and in case they need some additional information, they can send an email to a human account, an email, and we will send them the information. This is only a kind of a filtration or a delay in order to block this abuse.
Yeah.
Can I ask Oscar something?
Sure. Let me ask him just one question, and then we'll take a cue. How many domain names do you have registered?
72,000.
72,000. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Tony. Yes.
No, it's okay. I was just looking at the NIC Mexico page, and I went to bancomex.com.mx, which is, I think, maybe one of your largest banks in Mexico, Oscar.
Yes.
And I just saw the information I got back. It's you have the date of creation, date of the last modification, name of the organization, address. Then you have three items, which are contacts, administrative, technical, and payment contact.
Right.
And I noticed that in each case, the email is the same. It's hostmaster@infoaccess.com. Is that a veil you have on this information?
I'm sorry?
Is it a mask you have on the information?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the question.
Okay. In other words, these emails here, they're all the same email. This is the NIC email where you have to get the information, right? You're not giving out directly the email.
Yeah, but
address.
Where did you see this information, the emails?
In your page, in NIC MX.
Yeah, and you see what?
I went in and I asked for Bancomex.
.com.
Okay. MX.
Let me try. Bancomex.
Yeah, okay. And I brought up the information on it. The domain name is already taken.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Bancomex.com.mx.
Yeah.
And I was seeing the data which you show when somebody comes in and looks for information.
And you're telling me that there's an email there? An email
account
there?
Yeah. You have administrative contact, technical contact, and payment contact.
Tony, what is?
But I think it looks like the email is the email of your organization.
All right, that's what it sounds to me like. It sounds like that's email to Oscar's entity, right? To the human account that would then be able to respond.
The legal at NIC MX, is that that account?
What is the email again?
Because I don't see any
email. I'm trying another one, sheraton.com.mx, okay? Just to see what information you get back on that.
Okay.
And in this case, no.
This is Steve Patel. I'll just say I have a totally different readout from bancomex.com.mx as the administrative, technical, and third, Contacto de Pago as Webmaster CNS via networks.
Yeah, and what there is no email
no
associated.
Email.
Yeah. Maybe what you saw, Tony, is in the previous page, we returned the results of the query, and some contacts, names may match this query. So maybe your previous query match with some contact names, and obviously when you query an exact name or similar name, it will return the information of this contact.
Well, it says here, yeah, Webmaster CNS via networks. Via networks is an ISP.
Right. Yes.
So you are giving here email addresses of an ISP if
right.
somebody wants to contact them.
Yeah.
So, so let's keep going with the, so because of the spam, there's been a pulling back of some of the contact information. The let's go to the data accuracy issue, if we could.
Yeah.
What's your process for dealing with, first of all, do you require accurate information in the registrant agreement in any way?
Yeah, we have an agreement online agreement, which is valid in Mexico legislation. The only problem is that the digital signature is not already in place, so it is like a gap in this issue. But anyway, we have in this agreement that the recommendations that the WIPO is published under best practices for the CCTLDs, which explained that in order to maintain the accuracy of the WHOIS database, we should ask for keep updated, true and accurate the information on every domain name records. So we ask for it, and in case we don't check for this normally, but in the case someone feels that it is not updated, someone may start a procedure where in case it is true that the information was not updated, the domain name holder may lose the domain name and or lost the domain name. So it is the procedure that the IP lawyers call the takedown procedure. So in case the information is not updated or inaccurate or it is not true, they may lose the domain name.
Hello, this is Patricio.
Hi, Patricio. Welcome.
Hi.
Welcome. We're just hearing from Oscar a bit about the NIC in Mexico, and then we will turn to you. Let us ask him just a couple more questions.
Marilyn, this is Steve Mattel.
Yes.
Could I get in the queue for a question?
Sure. And let me do a queue for Oscar right now, and then we will. So I have Steve.
And me, Tony Harris.
Tony. Anyone else? Steve, let's start with you, and then we'll see.
Okay. Oscar, is there a timetable for restoring full WHOIS access, the kind of access that you had prior to this incident that you talked about, and when do you think that will occur?
In the case of the takedown procedure?
No, not in the takedown procedure. You had said that because you had this incident involving spam, you've taken a lot of the WHOIS information and not made it available online. You have to send an email for it. Do you plan, you said you wanted to put technical controls in place to try to prevent that from happening again. Do you have a timetable for putting those controls in place?
Okay. Yes, that's what we want to do, but we don't have a timetable because we are waiting for the local legislation on the privacy issues. So we don't want to start doing anything before it is published. We have several problems because in Mexico, when the country signs a free trade agreement or something with another country, it becomes a law for the Mexican territory, this new agreement. So we have signed free trade agreements with the United States and with Europe. So if we don't have a privacy legislation, that we should apply the free trade considerations on privacy with the United States or with Europe, but it is not clear which of those two considerations should we apply, the Europe ones or the United States ones. So it is complicated because we are in this another gap too.
Okay, so until there is legislation on the topic, you don't expect to have restore the access to WHOIS data that you had up to
on this legislation, at least, we want to see some light on what would be decided before we develop something.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
And Tony?
Yeah, well, actually, Oscar just answered the same question I was going to make.
Okay. Do we have any other questions for Oscar before we move to Patricio? Patricio, we really appreciate your joining us, and the effort on the part of the task force is to try to understand some of the different issues that the CCTLDs are facing and how they deal with who is, and to just better inform ourselves a little bit about the different situations. Many of the CCTLDs, of course, have been operating for quite a long period of time and have national law to be responsive to, which we've heard from Bernie, from Canada, from Sabine, and from Oscar, and now from you for a bit about Chile.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm here ready to answer your questions, and Margarita Valdez, our legal advisor, is here with me too, so she can help in case there's some hard legal questions.
I doubt it will be really into the hard legal questions. The folks on the let us tell you who's on the call, because I think you're not as familiar with our task force. So let me ask people very quickly to tell you who they are. This is a task force of the Names Council that's working on who is policy recommendations. And let's just go around on the call and introduce ourselves. I'm Marilyn Cade. I am with AT&T. I'm with the business constituency, and I'm one of the co-chairs of the task force.
Tony Harris, Cabase, Argentina, co-chair of the task force.
Hi, Tony.
Hi.
Steve Metallitz, International Intellectual Property Alliance from the Intellectual Property Constituency.
Mm-hmm. Thomas Roetzler, right now a little bit ahead of being a full mathematician, chairman of the General Assembly of the Domain Name Supporting Organization.
Laurence Drelacchion, I'm working for the Motion Picture Association in the Brussels office in Europe, and we are a member of the IPC.
Sarah Andrews, the Electronic Privacy Information Center, non-commercial constituency.
Mm-hmm.
Do we still have Abel?
Yeah, we still have it. I'm just patient and listening. I'm Abel Weissman, member of the GA.
This is Oscar Robles for NICMX and from the CCTLD constituency. And let me thank you, Patricio and Margarita, for accepting this invitation with a very short notice. Thank you once again.
That's okay. Some familiar names.
Patricio, could you start out by telling us how many registrations you manage, whether what form of who is you have, how people interact with who is and with the registry, and then we'll just kind of take it from there.
Okay, our registry currently has something in around 80,000 registered domain names, and the way it works, when we receive a request for a registration, and I believe we are unlike most CCTLDs in this. Publish those requests in a list that can be seen by everyone in our website, and we do that during 30 days, and that's to allow for somebody who feels that has a better right to that domain name, or it's somehow has some rights that are somehow infringed by that request, to present a competing domain name registration, and that practice has allowed us to solve most cases of intended cyber squatting very, very quickly, right at the beginning. Besides that, we do have the possibility of asking for the revocation of a domain name that's already been assigned, but that's much, much later in the process. So in that sense, the availability of at least the names of the domain names and the identities of the registrants is an integral part of our registration system. Now, the data that we make available through our website is the basically it started being the same as what you usually see in .com, for instance, and we've been limiting that very much as we've been having to defend ourselves and our users mostly from people trying to harvest information from our website to spam them. And so what we do now is that when you request something through our website, you do get some very minimal contact information, but that doesn't include any addresses, be them physical or email or telephone number. You have to request them by email, and that's all automated. You get immediately an automated reply, but we use that to limit the number of queries that you can issue during a day. And so that's one limit that we've placed on this. And the other one is that we don't give you all the information. Actually, there is in the set of data that we collect, there is one piece of information which is the what we call the root in Chile, which is an identity number, an ID number, which is in Chile we have a universal ID, and we collect that, we store them in our database, and that's essential to identify the registrant, but we do not publish it. You cannot get it through our website. But we make them available to the courts when they request that. In a few cases, we have had requests coming from a court that's where somebody suing somebody else because of a domain name, and they request us to identify who the holder of a domain name is, and to the court we provide all the information, including this ID number. That's basically it.
That's fascinating. So that would be a universal ID would be, I guess, the equivalent to a U.S. Social Security number, probably?
That's right.
Yeah. Do you want to take a cue? Oh, I have a quick question before we move on to questions from others. Do you have second-level domains?
All domain names are registered right under .cl.
They
are. We do not subdivide the domain name space in Chile.
I see. And can I just go back to you, Oscar? Do you subdivide the domain name space in Mexico?
Yes, we have classifications like the GTLDs, .com, .mx, .net, .mx, and so on.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. Do we have questions from the task force for Patricio or Margaret?
This is Steve Metallic. I just want to say, I, while Patricio was laying this out, I kind of went through the system that he talked about and sent the email to ask for the further information. I've already gotten it, so it does seem to be a very highly automated system. Now, what it's given me is the name, mailing address, telephone number, and email address of the administrative contact. I used IBM.cl just at random. It provided that information to me by email within a matter of moments. Now, is there any other information that is available besides what I got by email?
I suppose you get the administrative contact for that domain. You could also have requested the technical contact information, but there isn't much else that you're going to get through that interface.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I didn't know that I was just requesting the administrative contact information. Is there another path that I would take to request the technical contact information?
I believe there are two buttons that you can press, one for administrative contact, the other one for technical contact.
Okay, I may have missed that. Thank you.
Patricia,
are there specific, and I guess this might go to either both you and Oscar, are there specific privacy laws in your countries that give you direction one way or the other on what you should be providing access to?
Pardon me, I missed the first part of your question. Can you repeat that, please?
Are there specific privacy laws?
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. There is a law that's been enacted more or less recently, which is data protection law in Chile. And we our analysis of that law indicates that it doesn't really limit very much what we can do in that respect. The law identifies some pieces of information that it calls sensitive information, and the availability of that information is very limited, but nothing of what we collect falls into that category of sensitive information. So apparently, and that's our reading of the law, and there hasn't been yet much opportunity to test anything of this in court, but our reading of the law is that it doesn't really set many limits on the amount of collection of information that we can make available. So most of the limits that we impose are more of things that have evolved to avoid this harvesting of information for spamming purposes.
Okay, Sarah, did you have any? Do you want to ask any further questions about the law?
No.
Okay. Data accuracy. I want to go back to data accuracy for just a minute.
Okay. The thing that for us is most important is to make sure that the identity of the registrant agrees with that of his ID number.
Mm-hmm.
What we used to do, and it turned out to be very cumbersome, was that, and this was like 3 or 4 years ago, when we had many fewer domain names, we used to request people to fax us a copy of their ID card. And these ID cards are issued for people from the ID Bureau and also for companies. That's the equivalent of the IRS that issues, the Chilean equivalent of the IRS issues those.
Right.
And we used to ask them to people to fax us a copy of their ID card, and that worked, so we could check, and it was required that it had to agree. We don't do that anymore. It was just too cumbersome. So what we're testing right now is a system where we would be able to online connect to the databases that the government databases for identification. So once you give us your ID number, we get your name or your company's name, and you continue from then on. So in that way, there's going to be no way that you can give us false information in that sense. About the rest of the information, the address or the email, we don't have really many mechanisms to make sure that is correct, except that when we discover information that's evidently false, people just typing garbage in those fields, we consider that application for a domain name is null, void, and we delete those. But otherwise, we don't really have a system in place to deal with those. Now, of course, the way we communicate with the users is by email. So if you don't provide a working email address at the beginning, you're not really going to be able to complete your domain name registration. Does that answer
mm-hmm.
your question?
Yeah. Others, do any of the rest of you have questions?
This is Steve Vitalis. I just have one question.
Sure.
The reason why the more detailed contact information is available by email, is that in order to control the harvesting of the data so that you can limit the number of requests, for example,
That's exactly correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I ask a question as well? Sabina told us that 70 to 80% of the domain names in Germany and Denmark are probably used for personal uses. Do either you, Patricio, or Oscar have a sense of the kinds of registrations that you get and what percentage of out-of-country registrations, even roughly?
Okay, in Chile, the number of domain names that are registered by companies is about 65%. The remaining 35% come from regular persons.
Mm-hmm. And so would that include, in the 65%, does that include nonprofit organizations and schools?
That's everything. We do not distinguish.
So that would be schools, educational institutions, government agencies, et cetera. So you still got a pretty high percentage of individual registration.
That's right.
In the case of Dotemex, Marilyn, we don't have a way to have this division between Mexican domain name holders and foreign domain name holders,
mm-hmm.
because many of them are done by through registrars.
Right.
So we don't know if those domain name registrations coming from VeriSign are from people of outside Mexico or Mexicans. And we have a lot of registration coming from final users too, so it's very difficult.
Mm. So you would expect that you do have a high number of individuals besides the company registrations. You would think that you would have maybe a high number of individuals as well who are registering for personal uses.
What was the question again?
Well, so let me give you an example. When I registered privatesectorworkinggroup.net, it was for the purposes of communicating with other people who are interested in commercial issues. When I registered, when I put up a website, a family website, it was for personal use.
Yeah.
Do you have that distinction? Even if you don't know the numbers, do you think there are a lot of individual registrations?
We use the .org and .org.mx as a individual use, but it doesn't. We don't prevent the use of .com.mx for individual purposes.
Sure.
But it is cheaper to register domain names on the GTLDs. It is probably the final decision for the individual users in Mexico at this moment to go to the GTLDs. And the rest of the the corporative users, the companies, will choose .com.mx either for protect their brands or because they want to use the .mx.
So can we ask, Sabina told us that registration for a domain name in Germany was like maybe $4 to $5. Can we ask you and Oscar roughly what the cost is in Chile and in Mexico?
Yeah, in Dotemex it is $3 to $5 yearly and 2 years in advance at the registration moment.
$35 yearly, and the first registration requires 2 years in advance.
Right.
Okay.
That's U.S. dollars?
Yes.
And in Chile, it's 10,000 pesos per year?
In Chile, it's 20,000 pesos for 2 years, which right now it's about 30 U.S. dollars for 2 years. So that would be 15 per year.
Okay.
So that's, when I compare that to, I think that's fairly similar to the cost to register in Australia, New Zealand, and many other countries. In some cases, it's even higher to register a CCTLD in some other countries.
May I ask one question to follow up?
Yeah.
Patricio, I see again on the Who Is Data for IBM.cl that you have there's an entry there called type of organization. Appendix B, and you list education, commercial, government, military, or other.
Yes.
If I were an individual registering in .cl, would I just check other, or is there some other?
Just the other. Now, that's not very reliable, and it's kind of a obsolete field of information that we've never done much with it. And the numbers that I quoted to be split between and organizations really comes from the number.
Right.
The ID number differs if you are an individual or a company.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything further for our guests before we move to talking about the task forces?
Yeah, about if I may add something about the prices for domain name registrations.
Yeah.
We've done a study in Latin America comparing the prices for domain name registrations.
Ah.
And that's published in our website, and I guess Oscar, I don't know, probably it's also in the LACTLD website, right?
Yeah, let me check at this moment if you want to
yeah.
keep...
Ranges go from zero, which is Argentina and El Salvador, and then comes Chile with actually $27.40, so that it just went down in U.S. dollars, followed by Venezuela, 34, Brazil, 34. That's, in all cases, it's for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then it goes through several countries with numbers like 50, 60, 70.
Mm-hmm.
Mexico is in the 70 level. And then it jumps to 100, even 150. So that's more or less the range that you see in Latin America.
Oh, that's helpful.
Patricia, you don't mind, I could forward this link to the task force.
Sure, no problem.
Oh, that'd be
okay.
Great. That'd be great. Now we're going to ask you guys, what do you think the single biggest challenge is that you face in relation to WHOIS? Or as a CCTLD, recognizing that you have individual national issues to deal with or national law, is there anything in particular that, well, before I ask you that question, I need to ask you a different question, I guess. Are you following the work that is going on at the IETF? On, I think, Abel, you forwarded something to us today.
Yeah, it was an RFC for the WHOIS, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I haven't been following it.
How do you feel about the issue of standard elements in for WHOIS, regardless of whether the access is made available? How do you both feel about the idea of standardization of elements, of data elements?
Well, I think that one thing that we can all do in ICANN and involving the CCTLDs and the rest of the community is develop some sort of recommendations
mm-hmm.
that we can look at and decide whether we can implement them in our countries.
Mm-hmm.
And the possible recommendation about common data elements, I think, is very helpful. None of us really wants to be inventing everything all the time.
Right.
So if other people have looked into this and decided that this or that piece of data is useful, we'll certainly want to look at it and we'll probably come to the same conclusion. The real problem actually comes when you try to make some of these things mandatory for CCTLDs, because then you start running into all sorts of problems on sovereignty and
right.
and local legislation. But the exchange of information and sharing of these kind of recommended standards, I think, is very useful.
Can I ask a question for change?
Of course.
Would any, whether it's the Chile or the Mexican registry, if an RFC was made wherein, for instance, the domain name, the DNS service, and the registrant owner's name, but no further data was given, would they be, or would they run into legal problems if they would subscribe to or cooperate with the setup of an international database cross TLDs?
It is for .mx?
For both, actually.
Okay, if you fail to provide all the information for the that we require, it is you cannot register the domain name. You need to provide all the information. Obviously, we cannot verify that this is a true information. We just trust. But in the case someone start the takedown procedure, we should verify that this information that you provide is true. And in the case we find that this information was false, you can lose the domain name.
Yeah, yeah, I can understand that, but that's not exactly what I meant. What I meant is if a cross TLD whois would be made, if an RFC for that was written, say the IETF comes back and says, okay, we have the solution to allow every country to implement its own rules, all we do is we have a basic set of rules for the whois, which means that if somebody does a whois, they will find the name of the registrant, optionally the registrar, but I would say the name of the registrar, the DNS for that domain, and an email address for tech admin or nothing at all. Furthermore, would there be any legal problems in any of those in any of your countries to work with that?
At this time, we are not sure, because as I say, it is not defined the Mexican legislation on privacy issues. It is just very basic approach for privacy matters. So we couldn't say that these recommendations could be applied for .mx or not, because we are not sure about it.
Abel, what you're suggesting is a cross whois searchability that would differ from what data was gathered, right? Because the cross whois, if it's searchable across the number of whoises, that would be the data that's presented, but not necessarily the data that's gathered.
No. What I mean is that in a limited presentation of the data.
Yeah.
In other words, their database would be staying sole authoritative and would stay all on its own. Just a very small percentage would be made available to a cross-whois database,
mm-hmm.
Going basically back to the first RFC on the whois, what the whois was meant for.
Okay. Currently, you may see several solutions for cross-registry whois information, but it is based on queries to the different whois servers.
Right.
I think that what the final user may or should receive is a data uniformity rather than a centralized whois server. And that would be the problem, the thing of the uniformity on the information that we should provide, rather than the whois centralized or effort to share the whois services.
And I think that's consistent with one of the findings that. There's one of the questions that we looked at, a number of the questions that we looked at in the survey indicated that users wanted consistency of data elements. Let me wrap this part up, Tony, unless there's anything that you would like to raise or as the co-chair at this point.
No, I think we've covered very good territory with them.
Let us say thank you to both of you. This is, I think, very helpful to us because we have heard from CCTLDs with a very wide set of experiences and size, and I think it's very helpful to us as a task force. And Oscar, thank you for... you and Patricio in particular, Oscar sort of having to wear two hats today.
Hi, Zabel.
Margaret, thank you for joining us. And see, we didn't have any tough legal questions.
Well, glad to be of help.
Thanks so much.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. What we need to do for the next 20 minutes is sort of race through our the status of our small group reports, and I need to work with you guys to put these into a draft so that we can have something that we can post toward the end of the week. Can I just go around those of you who are leading a group? I know Rahm is not on the call, but on last week's call told me I would have something. I think he's must be struggling with his deadline because I didn't hear back from him.
Marilyn, this is Steve. In working group one, I think there's one loose end that we need to tie down. I mean, we'd already circulated.
Yep.
But there is a loose end that we need to tie down, which Thomas raised on our previous call. I think once we do that, we will have it ready to go. Whether I don't know if it's exactly in the format that's needed for plugging in, but at least the content would be there.
Yeah, I'm gonna do. I think, Steve, is begin the drafting. I have the outline we need to follow that I need to post to people, and I thought what we would do is try for the interim posting to just make sure that it's easy for people to submit questions. So I will, Louis kind of has a nanosecond of breathing time because, you know, they are getting ready to post the final interim report on October the 1st. So I need to talk to him about what seems feasible for the interim report in terms of putting a link up to our site, to the DNSO site, and putting it into the format that people can easily submit comments. What is the loose end again? Sorry?
Thomas had raised the question about whether something like a redemption grace period ought to apply for names that were about to be deleted because of bad contact data. So we need to
Yeah, and
whether
and
some distinction should be made depending on the length of the registration, things like that.
Right.
Like treat aged registrations more gently than new ones. Things like that.
Yeah, would you also, I do think 15 days may be a short period of time for that. So when you guys look at that, would you, 15 days could be literally 2 weeks, and people could be gone on holiday for that long.
Well, 15 days usually is 2 weeks, but this is a different question, which is
once
time has passed, then what happens? Does it automatically get deleted, or does it go into the limbo
that
others do?
Right. But would you also look at the length of time?
Yeah.
Okay. And by the way, you could just post that as a question for comment.
Right, but if we could reach consensus on it within our group, we could.
That would be great. Is Christy? Has Christy joined us? No. She knew. She had let me know she was going to be a bit late. Steve, I know you're kind of doing double duty because.
Karen asked me to keep an eye on group four, and I don't think there's been any traffic on that, so I don't know exactly where that stands, and since I wasn't on the last call, I'm not sure if there was any discussion there, but there had been a draft circulated, and I know it was discussed two meetings ago, but I don't know exactly where that stands.
Maybe we can follow up with some of the other members and see if we can okay. And I will call Rahm and see. I think I'm not sure what the holdup is because he had indicated he would have something. So what I'd like to do is by the end of the week go ahead and post the interim set of recommendations. We have, Thomas, could you speak briefly about the GA session?
The current idea of the GA session is three blocks, one hour who is, 1 hour deletes, and 2 hours transfers. The who is meeting has to be prepared by this group. I think that's it right now for this group, and Actually, the current planning is that Elisabeth Pottener will share the GA, but if things will work out with Markler, I may quite well be able to chair it myself.
I want to raise a couple of things that I think are important to tomorrow. We will have the opportunity to have a dialogue with the registrars. And Steve, do you have a dial-in number for that?
You
have it.
Pardon me? Pardon me?
I think a dial-in number was sent out on that, I think.
I'm not sure, but did it go to everyone?
No.
Well, I have to check.
I haven't seen any.
Yeah.
No, me neither.
Yeah, I think...
I've got it here if you...
Could you?
Yeah, it's 1-617-715-5010, and the code is 94647.
And I will repost it to this group. I just it got set up with the idea that it would be a smaller group, and then we asked them to expand their ports to accommodate all of us, and they did that. So I will send this out. But that's Abel. That's why I didn't actually have it before, because I wasn't on the smaller group. Okay, on the registrar discussion tomorrow, let me share briefly a bit more about what I am hearing that I think would be very important to better understand, and that we need to just listen as opposed to really spend a lot of time expressing our opinion. So the task force needs to be very much in listening mode, guys, to the extent that you can force yourself to do that. There are some of the discussion and around the four elements that we have raised, and some of the discussion that I was hearing is that some registrars are not sure, don't believe, are looking at Accurate Who Is as an unfunded mandate. Any change, it's important to remember that there is an existing policy in place today, and that any change would take a consensus approach to changing policy. So the registrars today are responsible for accuracy of data. And should there be any change in the data that is provided, it does take consensus policy to recommend that. The GoDaddy recently introduced a new service.
Marilyn, before you get to GoDaddy,
yeah,
can I ask a question about
yep.
your point there? You say that there may need to be changes in policy. The policy now is that they are responsible
yes.
for this, so that if it's an unfunded mandate, it exists now.
Yes.
And they're concerned, they want to make a change so that it wouldn't be their responsibility. Is that what you were picking up?
What I was picking up is a question about the uses of Who Is and a distinction of just trying to explore whether all the data needed to be gathered or provided, and whether other funding mechanisms might be feasible, such as subscription-based services or differential access somewhere along the line.
But those are all different questions than
yes.
accuracy, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The other thing I was picking up is that some registrars, I do want to make a distinction because I haven't talked to a lot, just to a few, that some registrars are noting that it's expensive to maintain accurate information. Others, and particularly, it kind of seems like the smaller registrars are doing maybe a better job of maintaining accurate information than the larger ones, because they may have more personalized contact with the registrant. But I'm really speculating, and that's why it'll be very important to hear from the registrars tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you. You were going to go on and say something about the GoDaddy.
Yeah, I will. What I'd like to do, if we can, is have the discussion led around each of the four topics by the team leader. But if they're not going to be on the call, and I'll post this, if they're not going to be on the call, then either Tony and I would step in or would recruit one of the task force members to lead that particular discussion. Sort of lay out the four areas we're focused on and then go into a more detailed discussion with them around any other areas that that they want to raise. On the GoDaddy issue, I was just noting that GoDaddy has recently introduced a new service. And
yes.
If I'm assuming they will be on the call tomorrow and that we can ask them a bit more about that service. I did post to you guys that after looking at it, the thing that leapt out at me with no comment at all about the service is a marketing approach that many e-commerce entities have avoided, and that is scaremongering.
And that is, what was the last part you said? Sorry,
scaremongering. Basically, we in the e-commerce...
Yeah, no, I don't agree with it.
Yeah.
I think this was waiting to happen. Nothing else. I said that before, and I think I wrote it to the NCU as well about 8 or 9 months ago. This was waiting to happen.
I'm sorry, Abel, what was waiting to happen?
This project, this offer, this product.
Oh, I wasn't making a comment about the offer.
No, but the way they sell it up, it's bound.
I see.
I know it's not communal, but come again, there's more happening that's worse than that in the end, I think.
Yeah. I was just saying that in the e-commerce space, most of us have tried to take a different approach with consumers because we want them to use the net and to feel that we can provide the solutions to address the problem. So I was sort of...
Hey, that's what they're doing too.
Marilyn, I know that and it sounds very noble and so on and so on, but in the end, you've been caught up by time and by spam and by porn kings and God knows what. So I think a lot of people have thrown the gloves off a long time ago on the Internet.
Mm. If you haven't taken a look at their service, though, I would urge you to, because I think they'll be on the call tomorrow, and I would expect other services like this. And you guys will remember that one of our questions addressed availability of service like this, and we got kind of low interest at that time, but I think, Abel, you may be pointing out that interest may be changing now.
Well, yes, as are your numbers. I don't think that of the current amount of domains held in the TLDs, that in the GTLDs at least, that there will be 80% of them will be business. I think a larger part will become private entities, and that shift will be going on.
I do think that shift has been going on. That's why I referenced the fact that my data was really old.
Yeah, I think that shift has been made for quite a while.
Yep.
One of the reasons for me to send out what I sent out today
was
that in order to keep, because we do keep a lot of things in mind and we look at a lot of things, we seem to at times forget the bigger picture or the more narrow picture. There's a chain of responsibility in the who is and a chain of who sets up which database. There has been and there will always be, and that's why the call tomorrow for me is very interesting, not as much as for what GoDaddy did as it is for the fact that each registrar basically is the one who defines his own database. The entire who is a combination of databases. It's not like the root servers.
It'll be very interesting to hear the thoughts of the participants tomorrow in the idea of uniformity and consistency.
Yeah.
Just one question. Just after Ram sent out the initial message on the GoDaddy service, I sent out a URL of their agreement with their clients. I hope everyone receives that because I think it may be helpful in order to understand what's going on there.
Ah.
It's online. You can find it on their website, and I sent out the URL. It's kind of interesting because you see that they have a very precise set of duties for the registrants which use that service, and it's writes down to abuse it and you lose your anonymity.
Mm.
and they have very distinctive rules on what kind of postal mail they are going to forward and what kind of postal mail they are not going to forward. So I actually think this is a well thought out model. You may wish to read the Life Agreement.
Oh, good. Yeah. Thank you. That's very helpful.
It was interesting.
I did see, I just want to make one further point. I did see the VeriSign folks briefly last week and mentioned to them that we would like to still have an update from them about the work they are doing on YooWhois, since it was clear that what we got was really an update on work that is going on in the standard space. And they've agreed to clarify for us what it exactly is that they are doing in the space where the $200 million investment is committed. So I'm going to ask them if they will do that by email rather than our trying to go back to another call just so that we can move ahead.
Yeah.
And that covers the extent of today's call. I think next Monday what we should be doing hopefully would be finally approving a draft interim report and working with Glenn to get it, which means we'll need to do some editing and writing late this week and try to get things finalized so we can get an interim report posted on Monday of next week. And that would make Monday of next week, then we wouldn't have a call for 2 weeks after that unless the small groups need further work together, which you may need.
Well, I don't think there's any work in our group that needs to be done or will be done.
Okay.
Marilyn, will there be a WHOIS session in Shanghai or a meeting between the members of the task force?
Yeah, I want to have a meeting of the task force on Sunday for those of you who are there. And Thomas just mentioned there will be a one-hour WHOIS session at the GA. There is still conversation on the part of the GAC about preparing for a WHOIS session but not in Shanghai, to follow, perhaps sometime early next spring. And I've asked the GAC chair to plan to discuss that with us as the task force as their thoughts evolve on that front. So I would presume, Lorenz, I'll send a notice out to the task force members, but I'm and we would need, I think, in the meeting, what we would want to do is to prepare for the WHOIS session, which really should be, I believe, a commentary on the draft final report, which we should have posted at that time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any questions?
Not really, no.
Okay. Very interesting discussion with the CCTLDs. I'm also hearing some interesting things about the level of work that they do in making sure that their data is accurate.
Yeah, I thought that was really good.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Marilyn. Take you a minute.
Bye.
Okay.